You're listening to a Chicks Talking Footy podcast on Joy 94.9. We are chicks serious about footy.
No, we're not. Our guest on Chicks Talking Footy tonight is Beau Newell. His pronouns are he, him, his. Beau is the National Program Manager of Pride in Sport Australia. Pride in Sport is an Australian first sporting inclusion program specifically designed to assist sporting organisations on a national, state, regional, elite, academies, foundations and club level with the inclusion of LGBTI employees, players, volunteers and spectators. Welcome to the show, Beau Newell.
Good evening.
Good evening. Now, Beau, Pride in Sport is such a fantastic organisation. I know a couple of weeks ago we had the Pride in Sport Awards, which we were proud to be nominated for the Positive Media Award. But the next day, your organisation announced that there was 8 peak sporting bodies and which included AFL, Rugby Australia, Cricket Australia, Netball Australia, Hockey Australia, Touch Football, Water Polo, Unisport. So some fairly major sporting organisations came together in a unified response to trans inclusion. Can you discuss the process and how that all came about?
Yeah, certainly. So this all came about from about 12 months ago. In fact, probably a little bit earlier than that, where we started having conversations with national sporting bodies that were interested in this space and wanting to learn more about how they could be inclusive for the transgender diverse population. And it was Cricket Australia that were one of the first organisations that developed their national guidelines and elite policy for the inclusion of trans people in cricket. And many of you would maybe remember that when cricket announced their respective policies and their work in this space, they got all of the good stuff that they were expecting, but they also got some of the bad stuff and some negative press that came with it. And I guess in a way, that was a bit of a learning curve for the other sporting organisations to see that this is such a hot topic issue that there's going to be negative commentary coming with it, regardless of how much positive commentary we can expect. And so that was essentially the basis that kickstarted a lot of my conversations with sports to say, okay, are you wanting to do work in this space? How can we help you with it? And then as I started having more and more conversations with different sports, it became very clear very quickly that quite a lot of sports across the country wanted to do something very similar to cricket. So cut a long story short, we had the conversation about, well, why don't we do this together? There's nothing stopping the sports from writing and developing their own respective policies and guidelines, but why don't we do a launch together and why don't we show a bit of unity in a launch such as what we did last week? And yeah, that's where we ended up.
Fantastic.
It is, and it's an amazing achievement. And as Jonas highlighted, it's 8 very high profile bodies who are prepared to unify on this particular issue. And I've had a look. So each code has a policy. There's quite a number of consistent unifying and underlying principles, but there are some unique differences. So I noticed with the AFL, it's quite prescriptive.
Yep.
With regards to play, where Cricket Australia policy is more about overarching guidelines, where they consider things like safety. Do you think this is due to the contact nature of the sports, or did all the sports go away and have a think about what was really particular to them and then come back to you? How did that all pan out, do you think?
Yeah, really good question. So at the end of the day, every organisation had their own process and they needed to take into account how their sport actually runs, how people compete and participate in their respective code. And it's really important for us to acknowledge at the forefront that, and these are some of the buzzwords we've heard a lot of, so safety and fairness are paramount for all sports in all sporting environments, irrespective of someone's gender identity. And so that's really important for us to acknowledge. So what the release of these policies and guidelines do for each respective code is to provide a clear direction for sports to ensure that their game is safe and fair. So you spoke about the differences that some of these sports have. And the other important thing for us to acknowledge is that we need to make sure it's clear about what level of that sport that we're speaking about. So in elite settings, for example, people from the trans community may need to meet particular criteria, for example, to be able to compete. So elite sport policies do exactly just that. They provide a clear framework. They provide that clear framework for the sports to follow and to ensure that people at the grassroots community level have that fair, safe and meaningful competition available for people. On the grassroots level, on the community level, however, we know that all sports have clear rules around grading and selection, for example. Most organisations will have those. So very similar to the framework for those is how these guidelines have been developed to address things like player disparity, for example, and to ensure that we safeguard players' safety to ensure that there is a fair competition for everyone involved. So going back to your original question, some of the sports like AFL and netball, for example, and cricket, who did theirs recently, they're three codes which have an elite policy. So that each of those respective policies do speak to particular eligibility requirements, and they are very unique for their specific sports. Whereas all of the other sports and those ones including would all have community guidelines. Now, if we're talking about community, it's more about participation. It's how can people play and enjoy the sport? And then the elite side of things, in some cases, maybe not necessarily these three sports, but I know there's organisations across the country at the moment that are having conversations with their international body, for example. And that may be something which really does shift or create a specific set of eligibility requirements that we've never seen before, all based on really how people can advance through participation pathways.
Wow, that's really exciting that there's international interest and that, you know, Australia is involved, heavily involved in those conversations and can also demonstrate what we've achieved in this space. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's nothing to sneeze about. I think it's one of the most interesting things. This is a conversation that almost every sport across the world is having at the moment. And this is why it was so exciting for these sports to come together last week. And look, I think it's one of those things where the sports acknowledge that they're not the experts in this space, and this is an evolving topic. Things will constantly change. And even for us, we needed to acknowledge the fact that what the sports delivered in this joint launch recently isn't going to be the end result. They're going to keep adapting and keep changing these policies to make sure that they are appropriate for their specific sports. And while, you know, you mentioned, Rach, that there's a couple of them which have similarities in their respective documents, who's to say what they'll look like in 12, 24 months' time or 5 years' time? They could be completely different and in for good reason as well.
I agree.
Yeah, and Bo, I watched the ABC on the 7:30 report. There was a segment about your announcement and trans inclusion. There was some high profile athletes like Jane Fleming, for example, that still believe there's an unequal advantage to particularly trans women who have gone through puberty and therefore have what they would perceive as physical advantages. What would you say to people like that that have those worries and concerns?
Look, I don't think I have the best answer for this, and just for the sheer fact that everyone's opinion is going to be different. So for those of you that watch Jane Fleming and her opinions on that ABC report, they could be very different to the next person with more conservative views in this space. I think we've sort of touched on a lot of them already in the fact that if you're going to make comments about your opinion one way or the other, you need to actually read and understand these particular policies. Unfortunately, and as we expected, quite a lot of commentary that came from people across the country once these policies and guidelines were launched spoke about things like, oh, this is unfair for, biological women in sport, and, trans women have a competitive advantage and that's all they transition for, to have that competitive advantage.
Yeah, paid a lot less money.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if they'd actually read these documents, they'd understand that that's not the case, you know. People don't affirm their gender just to get a competitive advantage. And I don't know why people have that perception. I'm not trans, so I can't speak to that, but I know for a fact that every trans person I know, they're not changing their gender, or they're not affirming their gender just to get a gold medal. In actual fact, it's very hard anyway. I mean, statistically, there's not enough trans people in the world to get every gold medal. So I think a lot of these concerns are based, and the good thing is that these guidelines and documents bust a lot of those myths. I think where the confusion and the further grey area for some people comes into play is when we're talking about these elite policies, for example. So remember when I said these are the ones that have the eligibility requirements. So some documents are like if you have AFLs and netballs and crickets, for example, they speak to things like testosterone levels and they take into account particular medical research specific to their sport codes and those things are addressed. Now, do we think that sports should have limits around things like testosterone? No, we'd actually like people to have a much more inclusive space. But it's really important for organisations like us to be working with these sports because if we don't, then no one's going to be there to educate them. So there's a lot more to it than what people are perceiving. And that's why I think it's really important that they actually need to read and understand the documents before they make comments.
I think
it's also interesting as well that the discussion is quite heavily around it being unfair in the female space because there's still this myth that women are weaker and not as strong as men and somehow it's going to be unfair in that sphere where these are, you know, these are elite sport people, plain and simple, fairness, safety, that's what the game is.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting you say that, Rach, because I know with the sports that have done work in their elite policies, so the likes of AFL and cricket and netball, and even rugby to a degree, it's one of the things that they made sure that they did when they were doing these documents was engage with the elite female players in their sports. And from all reports, all of the elite female their respective coaches said, you know what, let's be more open. Let's let more people play and compete with us because it's only going to push us further.
Interesting.
Exactly.
And the other thing that keeps coming up is toilets and change rooms. And that's from both sides, I think, you know, just feeling safe and comfortable, change, going to the toilet, all that sort of thing. Do you think clubs need to be very conscious of facilitating that side of things?
I don't think so. I think at the end of the day, if we're talking about, if people have a concern about safety because of toilets, there's no research that the size of a toilet is going to stop it happening in that toilet. That's just a sad reality. So
I always go to the toilet at my house, so...
Really? I'm quite about that.
Oh, my goodness. I do too. That is such
amazing.
A good point.
Amazing.
I know we're running out of time, but I just have one quick question I'd like to know. From your perspective, how important do you think this genuine commitment is to children who are transgender or gender fluid? Looking to the future.
I can't even put it into words. This work is so important, and I'm so excited that not just these sports have launched, but so many more are committed to working in this space because we're going to be saving lives. That's what it comes down to, Rach. I mean, we heard it from speakers on the day, and we have the support of people like Colin Seary, who was the CEO from Lifeline, who spoke at the launch. And even he said that this work will save trans lives. If people can feel like they have a place to belong, and if that's in a sporting club, then we're making a massive difference.
Yeah, beautiful. I think when policy, education and visibility comes together, we've got a good thing. I think it's everyone's human right to play sport and be involved. So you do such great work at Pride in Sport, Bo, and we really appreciate
you
coming on to Chicks Talking Footy, and we were very excited to see this announcement, the policy being developed by, you know, the peak sporting bodies that represent millions of people. So well done.
My pleasure. Have me back again soon.
We will.
Definitely.